Hello, and welcome to the Project Elected podcast. Project Elect is a nonpartisan nonprofit whose goal is pretty simple. We want to get more Latter-day Saint women involved in public service. On this podcast, we interview amazing Latter-day Saint women who are involved in public service. Hi, my name is Audrey Perry Martin. I'm the founder of Project Elect and the host of this podcast. Today, I have a really incredible guest. Her name is Katie Olson. She's running for the Utah House, and she's full of great ideas. I'm really excited to talk to her about all of them. So thank you so much, Katie, for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
I've been wanting to meet you for a long time, so I'm thrilled to finally actually see you, not in person, but almost. Next best thing. Well, let's get started. Would you just start out introducing yourself? Maybe tell us a little bit about your background and who you are.
Sure. I'm Katie Olson. I was born and raised in Utah County. My dad was a firefighter. I grew up a little bit around public service. Didn't think that was for me until all the dots started to align and God made everything make a lot of sense of what was going on in my life. And I came into the political and public service sphere. So I work for the city of South Jordan. I am the associate director of strategy and budget there. That's my full-time job. I'm also running for the State House District 48 in Utah. It's a new district with no incumbent out in South Jordan, Harriman, and Riverton. And then I am also a full-time mom. I'm never not a mom. Mom and a wife.
Yeah, yeah. How many full-time things can you get out there?
Oh, you'd be surprised.
impressive. Okay, so I know you've been involved in city government. And can you tell me a little bit more about your job, about what you do in the city?
Yes, absolutely. So my whole role is to do process improvement and aligning our budget with our values. So at our city, we do priority-based budgeting. So we really look at what is an actual priority and then how much does it really cost us to do it? So most cities could look at their budget and say, well, it costs us less than our entire public works budget to snowplow. But we could tell you, here's how much time and all of those non-personnel line items that actually go into providing a snowplow service to our cities or to our residents. And then we can score those programs based on our values. So we know we value an engaged community. We value having desirable amenities and open space. So we take that and score it. And then we look at how can we improve the way this budget's aligning. And then with that, I do a lot of process improvement. So I have a black belt in Six Sigma, which is about making sure that in a million opportunities, there's only three mistakes. So we try and get our processes as clean as possible, that we do it just right, because it doesn't matter if you get a fly in your food at a restaurant, it doesn't matter if they served a million other meals right. You care mm-hmm. about the fly in your food. Mm-hmm. So we try and give that same level of service to our city residents. So we're looking at processes. I just spent time the other day with our field prep. So getting a ball field ready to play on. What are all the steps it takes and how can we improve it? And with that, it's trying to run lean, trying to eliminate any types of waste so people aren't waiting around, so we're not disrespecting either our taxpayers or just humanity in general, right? We don't want to waste anybody's time. We want to give a really excellent level of service. So that's my role. That's what I do. Prior to that, I worked on our community development block grant, which is a federal fund that benefits low to moderate income residents. So I used to also spend a lot of time in that sphere of how can we actually help people who are struggling at a lower income level to help them get into good housing, make sure they have access to service. Along with that, we did some domestic violence prevention types of support as well.
Okay. So the way you describe your job, it sounds kind of incredible to have that in a city. Do most cities have this? Is this something that's unique to you guys?
I think we're the first city to really start it up in Utah. It's a lot more common out in Denver, and some other larger cities often will have those types of departments. Uh-huh. But for a city of our size, it's new.
Okay.
Some places, you know, they've got 4 to 5 people in an innovation department that do that. But we're pretty new. We have a team of 3. And it is really just all about that commitment and realizing this is the future and the way to really save money, especially in a world where we keep getting asked to do more with less. It's harder to recruit people because everybody's in a tech industry job. So we find it to be, it's a lot of prevention, right? Yeah. And that's the best cure.
Yeah. That's amazing. I love it. I would love to talk to you about this for hours because it's fascinating. I mean, it seems like it has the potential to do a lot of good in government and help things run more smoothly and be very proactive about what you're doing and what you're deciding to do. Instead of, I mean, I've worked in politics for a long time, so I see so much of the other side of it where it's not, things are not run very efficiently, and it's kind of fly by the seat of your pants style. So this is fascinating to me.
Yeah, and I get to be an internal consultant, so I play in everybody's backyard. So I'm out with fire. I'm out with public works. Some days I'm in finance. That's the best part of my job.
I feel like we could go down a lot of rabbit holes right now, but I'll try and steer us back on topic. Okay, so you did go back to school, right, to get a master's in public administration. Why did you decide to do that? Why public administration?
Oh, there are so many stories with this that it really was like God starting to put all the stories back into a row. When I got my patriarchal blessing probably like 16, 17, and I had this weirdly specific thing about working in hospitality. And I was like, I don't know what that means. And at some point, somebody pointed out to me like, oh, hotels, that's the industry of hospitality. And I was like, I don't think that's what God wants me to do. But I kept thinking about it. And I really put a lot of work and prayer and thought into this idea of like, what is it you want me to do? What is this thing? There was a point where I was going to be a social worker. At some point, I kind of gave up on that. And I was like, fine, I like to edit. I'm going to do a bachelor's degree in humanities. I'm going to learn how to edit. That's what I did. I was really good at it, but I always knew, I was like, I don't think we found that thing, Heavenly Father. Like, what is this thing that we're supposed to be doing? At the time I was editing, I got married to my husband, Jacob, who's incredible. We had this really awful release ID activity where the men were supposed to fill out a bio about their wives. And all of them were like, my wife's dream job is to be my personal secretary. And Jacob went to do mine, and he sat and he thought about it. And he was like, Katie's dream job is to be the benevolent dictator of a small to medium-sized town. And at that point, I had never thought about going into government. I really thought politics was something that other people did, and there were just smart people in the world, and at some point we'd figure it out. And I was like, what is this? This is the weirdest description of me I've ever read. But then it started to feel like, oh my gosh, I think you know my soul, and this is exactly what it is. And so the big story with going back to doing my master's in public administration was that Jacob got really sick. He'd always had bad depression, anxiety, mental health issues, which I'd always known about. It was not a surprise to me. I had worked. Our first daughter came at a very unexpected time, and I was like, okay, I'm leaving the workforce. Maybe I'll never go back. I'll stay home with this baby, I guess. Jacob went to work, and then 6 days before our second child was born, he got so sick he could not get up and go to work. He could not put his shoes on. It was like his brain just shut off. It was so hard to figure out, you know, do I get the milk or the cereal out of the fridge first? And now I can't eat because I'm stuck. I'm physically stuck to the ground. I cannot make this decision. So it manifests kind of looking like a neurological condition. So I was about to have this baby in 6 days, and we were like, okay, luckily we've been saving and been working hard on that. So we moved in with my in-laws, who are the most fantastic people in the world, who took care of us. We had our baby. She was fine, and she made the world so happy in the scary time. We got good treatment for my husband, but I knew, okay, I need to go back to school, and I need a job this time. I need a real solid career type of move. When I had edited before, the bio of a city manager came across my desk, and I thought, well, this is a cool job. This is like all those things you get to work on. You get to, you know, do roads, but you also get to talk to people and do fun community events. And that was where all the pieces started to fall into place. Like, oh, my dad was a firefighter. I've always been around this kind of thing. Oh, remember that story from Jacob about being a benevolent dictator? And it just was this moment of, this is it. This is hospitality. This is making a home for people. This is what we do. And so I went back, did my master's in public administration, specialized in local government, went out to work for the city of South Jordan, and fell in love with it, loved the way they did things. It really fit all the stuff I wanted to do. And it's been amazing ever since. It's another story how I got into politics, but that's really the heart of it, was I wanted to make a home for people, and there was no better way to do that than local government. Like, when your water turns on in your house, that's us.
I mean, that's an incredible story. Not just that your husband knew your soul so well that he called you a benevolent dictator, because that's amazing. But also just how you turned a patriarchal blessing that didn't make a lot of sense to you at the time into a profession that most people wouldn't make that connection, but you were able to make it through, I'm sure, a lot of prayer and agony and, you know, thoughtfulness. But that's really such a great story. Thank you for sharing that. But now I have to hear the what drove you to get involved in politics story, because you've teased that. And now you got to tell me that one.
Well, maybe that one's less exciting. Maybe I played that one up too much. When you run for office, you're constantly going to get asked, why did you decide to run? And I always feel like I've never got a very standardized answer, because there were so many pieces that went into it that sometimes people ask me and I'm like, because of this? But my mind is like oh, all those things.
It's a Lego structure. I'm just building on it.
Yep. I mean, really, I didn't pay attention to politics till 2016, which is right when my husband got sick, right before I went back to school. I started watching the debates, and I was really frustrated by how people were treating each other and just the absurdity. There was a moment in which a comment was made. I will not get too specific, but it was so uncalled for and mean that I just felt like, what is this thing? Why are people acting like this? This is not what I thought was going on. I thought there were smart people in the world, we'd work hard, we'd figure it out eventually, we'd argue about how to do things, but generally there was respect and goodness. And seeing that change made me feel like, okay, I need to start paying attention. I need to start looking into these things a little bit more. So I started following that, and of course went to local government. And the city management profession, we try to stay out of politics. That's our goal, is always to do what our council wants us to do, and that's very much my professional day-to-day role. But at the state level, I started to see bills run, one in particular that did not pay attention to the numbers. I'm a data person. I was like, those are not, you just ran this huge bill that was about something that has literally never happened, numerically never happens. And it just added lots of barriers to people participating that I didn't like. And that's where all my training started to come into play, of thinking like, oh, I wish they were checking things and talking to more people and looking at the numbers before they did stuff. And at that moment, shortly thereafter, my new district opened up right around my house. So when they redistricted, they cut my neighborhood in half, probably because of how I voted. And then there was a new district with no incumbent, and somebody tapped me to run. Another woman that I respect said, Katie, have you ever thought about doing this? And I was like, oh, I kind of thought maybe I would do that in my retirement age. Maybe in my 60s, I would get into the state legislature or something like that. But it became pretty clear, like, this is the moment. And the thing that I keep coming back to in all this process is it's really hard to run. When my husband's health goes up and down, and I feel like, why am I running for office when sometimes my husband can't tie his own shoes? But like every time that thought comes up, God is very clear about reminding me, because there are people running the government who don't know what it's like when their husband can't tie his own shoes. And it just has felt like, okay, this is the right time. We're doing this thing. We're just going to talk to our neighbors. That's really what Jacob told me at first. It's like, we're going to do this because we like to talk to our neighbors. And this is just talking to our neighbors at a larger scale. And that's kept me going and made me feel like, okay, we're gonna stand up for good, thoughtful politics, good, moderate politics, and just talking to come to answers. What I wanted politics to be was a space of respect and working together with smart people to try and come up with good answers.
I'm getting a little emotional because of your story about how, you know, you're running because there's people in government who don't know what it's like to have their husband not be able to tie their shoe. And that just hit me so hard, because the whole purpose behind this organization, Project Elect, getting more women to run in general, is just, we need more representation of people who have different backgrounds, different experiences, different life experiences and perspectives, who can bring that to the table. And you bring that to the table, plus data analytics, which is something that I love as well. So I you know, that's a 1-2 punch right there. So mm-hmm. I'm glad that you were inspired to run. That's amazing. And I'm sure, you know, it's a little rare for someone of your age and gender in Utah to be running for state legislature. It doesn't happen all the time, but it's so fantastic that you're doing it. And I want to ask you how it's been, you know, kind of being outside the norm of who is usually seen as a candidate in the state of Utah and everywhere, really. I mean, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Sometimes I always hate when people are like, you're such a super mom, because really my husband is a full-time stay-at-home dad. I don't know that we could do it without that, because he's providing so much support. He's taking care of our kids. I mean, we have an 18-month-old baby right now too. So like, we really hit all the time periods. Like, this is the craziest time we could have picked to run. making it work is a lot of working together as a family, and for sure bringing your kids along is helpful and also motivating to me. Like, my daughter just started kindergarten. It was a big fiasco. It was really hard to get all that scheduling and the drop-off working. But in my mind, I kept thinking about how the Utah legislature had recently said, you can do full-day kindergarten, but we're not going to fund it. And I was like, oh, I really would have chosen to fund that. That's a decision that could have made a really big impact in my life and helped my family. And so it's nice to have those reminders of, I'm not doing this big grand thing to maybe affect things down the road, but if I can get in, I could really affect how my own family is run and how they're being taken care of. I wanted, you know, people to be making decisions that were a little bit more like me, especially for young families, because what our needs are is just so different. And we absolutely do need more representation of that. We need more women. We need more moms. We need more people that are out there balancing their own household budget, more people that are in the day-to-day drama of, I need to make dinner. I can't afford to eat out every single night. I've got to do something different. And I think running for office tends to lend itself to other types of roles that are a little bit more easier to do that and a little more easier to keep balance. But it does result in representation that is not representative. Yeah. And that's something I would like to change.
Yeah. Amazing. Okay. So what has been your favorite job or volunteer experience you've had? We've talked a little bit about some of the stuff you've done, but what really gets you excited?
I mean, other than my current job, I love my current job. But prior to that, when I was at BYU and I decided, okay, I'm going to go into humanities. I don't know what this hospitality thing is out there. But I love doing a little bit of everything. At the time, I was much more into arts, literature types of things, and I really miss math. I was like, I really miss doing math. And I landed a job for BYU's College of Physical and Mathematical Sciences. We call it CPMS. And I was on their marketing team. They decided, we're going to build a marketing team to get people to realize what cool majors we have over here, what all the careers are. So I started as an editor for them, and it was the most incredible team of people I have ever met and worked with. I still quote things that people told me back then that I learned from, and some of the best memories. So we would go around and we made videos. So sometimes we'd be up at BYU has a West Mountain Point Observatory, like a telescope up on a mountain in the middle of the night, making videos about how come join our major, come see the careers you could do. We got to hang out in their anechoic chamber, a giant foam room with a net in the middle, so everything's suspended so you can do science experiments without sound. And it was just amazing to work with this really close-knit group of people who were going to churn out a really good product for a really good reason. And that I loved. I interviewed a stats professor who said he loved stats because he got to play in everyone's backyard, because he would do the statistics and all these different types of research papers. And that's kind of become my thing. I was like, I want a job where I get to play in everybody's backyard. I've never had a general education class I have not used. I always tell that to people. I'm like, oh, those are so worthwhile. You should get in there, because you never know when, like, life and God are just going to pull out things and be like, you're going to need this one today. And so that was such an incredible job for me.
That sounds like a lot of fun. So I want to talk too about what you think makes a good public servant. Sorry. What skills, what personality traits, what do you think makes somebody good to serve in? Serve the public.
In the research field, there's a thing they actually study called public service motivation. So PSM, it's an actual like a scientific term that people look at. And I've really found that people thrive in these types of jobs when they have that motivation, that sense of, I need to work on something bigger than myself. Like, I've never made it in any job where I was just supposed to make people money or, you know, provide some type of business aspect. I really needed to feel to me like I was serving a larger purpose. And I think when you've got that sense, that's public service is right where you should land with that idea of, I could do something to help people. Because it's very centering at the end of the day, and I think it helps you keep that bigger picture, which is something you need in public service. Because there are just so many things going on all the time that you've got to have that sense of grounding, I think, to really thrive and do well.
Mm-hmm. And have that kind of overall understanding that what you're doing is mm-hmm. helping. Yeah.
Right.
No, I think you're right. I think that's kind of an instinct that you have. And if you've got it, you've got it. And you know you've mm-hmm. got it. Yeah. Yeah. That's interesting. It's I wish more of our public servants seem to have that. So who inspires you politically? Who are your political role models? Who do you look to when you're looking for inspiration?
This is a tough question. My first answer was Jed Bartlett, who is the president in the West Wing, like the TV show. So not a real person.
That's a good one. No, it's a good one. I mean, I'm all about modeling your life after fictional characters. That's
right. No. The more I started to think about that, I don't know that I have a super strong political role model, but what I have really been drawn to lately is looking for people that I disagree with sometimes, but that are willing to stand up for truth that I do agree with. So Liz Cheney recently has become one of my favorite people. I disagree with her on lots of policy types of positions, but her willingness to stand up in these January 6th hearing committees and sort of, you know, let go of her own political career in some ways to say, this is true. Mm-hmm. This is not true. Mm-hmm. I really admire that, because that's what I want to represent in politics, is being the type of person who's willing to call a spade and who's also willing to work with people on things. I think we can argue back and forth about the best way to do things, but we do need to agree on what the basic facts are of an issue so we can move forward. I've really admired her for that.
Yeah. Yeah. Which agreeing on the basic facts is a lot harder than you would think it would be.
It is. That's true.
It becomes very difficult in the world we're living in to know what the basic facts are these days. So I want to kind of transition and talk a little bit about women in faith and women running for office. We've kind of talked a little bit about representation and why it's important. But what about women in faith specifically? Do you think more of them should be encouraged to run for office, should run for office? And if so, or if not, why?
I think so, absolutely, that more women in faith should run for office. I think everyone should run more for office. Like, everybody needs to bring their voices together in order for democracy to work out. And I think, especially with those women, if we're losing those voices, we're losing a lot of strength and a lot of goodness that those people have to offer. And I think because women of faith do have such a strong public service motivation, those are the type of people I really want to hear from and to have representing our community. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. So what would you say to women who are reluctant to enter the fray of politics? I'm sure you have some good stories about the fray that you've entered. And I mean, it's a mean world. So what do you say, you know, when I talk to women, they're always like, oh, I would never do that. I would never do that. I don't have a thick enough skin. How do you respond to that?
In some ways, it's as bad as they say. That's been hard for me to recognize, like, oh, yep, there are all of these games. There's all this gossip. It gets a bad name for a reason in some ways. But I don't have a thick skin. It's miserable. And I am learning how to get a thick skin. And at the end of the day, you've got to decide, like, are you willing to let the world be run by people who have a thick skin and maybe have stopped listening anymore? Who do you want making those decisions? And for me, I thought, okay, I don't want only those people making decisions. I also was talking with our police department the other day, and they were like, it's hard to find people to recruit into these positions because we feel like people are just afraid of confrontation anymore. And it became really obvious to me in that moment, like, we need police officers. Like, we can't have everybody be afraid of confrontation. There are roles that need to be played. And if we're all afraid of confrontation, nothing's ever going to get done. Mm-hmm. And nor are we going to get any better if we're not willing to talk. And so in some ways, you've just got to do it. You've got to stop deciding that's too hard or I can never do that, because it just needs to get done. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And it's never going to get better if we just keep leaving it to the people who are thick-skinned and thrown in. Mm-hmm. So how has your experience been running for office?
It's actually been really good. I've enjoyed pretty much every part of it, except we are absolutely exhausted. But other than that, it has been really good. much of it has been better than I thought. And really, I've realized my goal is to talk to 8,000 people, pretty much. And we've had maybe one or two people that have been even remotely unkind to us, and everybody else has been very civil. So it's sort of a numbers game, which those conversations can be sticky. Sometimes I remember those the most because they weren't as kind to me. But at the end of the day, I was like, oh, but I also talked to, you know, 1,000 people who were really nice to me and who were really willing to talk and engage. And even when they had different opinions, to say, like, thanks for running. Thanks for working hard. Thanks for talking to me. Thank you for including me in your process. That's shouldn't be surprising, but it is that so much of it actually will be good. And the stress kind of gets normal. They're like, I just filed a financial report this morning, which at the beginning of my campaign terrified me. But now it's just normal. You really just learn how to do things. You adapt. I have thought so much about marathon running while I've been campaigning. I am not a runner, and I do not understand how people run like ultra marathons. That seems incredible to me. But I started to think about it like, oh, people, human beings are capable of way more than we think. Like, you could push your body. You could do that. It's actually not impossible. And that's how I've been feeling with this campaign, is we've added stuff and there's so much stuff going on in our lives, but we've really just sort of stretched and grown and we can do it. We are running the sort of superhuman feat right now, and it's working. It's fine. Like, we're just getting there, and you start to realize which balls are glass and which ones are rubber, and you drop some of them and you don't drop some of them because they're really important. Like, you know, taking your care of your children, not losing your children on the campaign trail. That one's super important all the time. But yeah,
that's
you can
key.
Do it.
That's key. That's amazing. So, okay, you say you want to talk to 8,000 people. How have you gone about talking to 8,000 people? Like, how do you actually accomplish that?
Yeah, and at first when I started my campaign, I was like, we might need to talk to 18,000. I think we can do that. And I've had to, like, really realize, okay, it takes a lot of time to talk to people. We probably won't talk to all 18,000. We do a lot of door knocking and a lot of phone banking. And actually, in most political races, that is the way to win. It's just door knocking. It is talking to people. There's no magic bullet of advertising. I mean, in some larger races, of course, that's different. But for my level of race, it really is all about talking to people.
Yeah.
I also have a campaign manager who is a saint and has made the world run. Having that help, getting a balance there, and then just doing it. I just have to pick up the phone and I have to dial those cold calls and get it done.
Yeah. And it sounds like you're doing a lot of the door knocking and calling yourself. It's not like you have a staff of hundreds who are making these phone calls.
No. And I think one list on one question I wanted to answer for sure. Well, if you want advice for people running for office, it is that volunteers will break your heart. And I wish somebody, I'd heard that recently, but I wish somebody told me at the beginning, because everybody's going to say, you're so awesome. I want to help. But most of them, almost all of them, never show up and do things. And you've got to be prepared for that a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. So what you've been holding some campaigning events that have been a little bit out of the norm. I wanted to ask you about those, how you get these ideas, and maybe tell me how they go.
Well, I don't know. I just get ideas and I get excited about them.
Tell me about them.
We did a comedy night fundraiser back in June. And I think that came to me like early on when we were first like, okay, we're going to do this big, crazy thing. We're going to run for office. What does that look like? And my good friend, Jordan Macon, I've known him since probably like seventh grade, maybe. He was in my biology class in ninth grade. It was the most miserable year of my life. And the only time I was happy was in biology class sitting next to Jordan because he was so funny. And then he since has gone on to become a pretty well-respected stand-up comedian. And so when I was thinking about what are we going to do to raise money, I was like, ooh, maybe I can get Jordan to come perform. And it was something that I looked forward to. It was something that became this idea of like, oh, that sounds fun. I want to do it because it sounds fun to me. And we worried a little bit less like, is that the most effective way? Is that what everybody else is doing? We did it because it sounded happy to us. Mm-hmm. Same thing with our clean campaign. So we go out once a month and we pick up trash on the side of the big major road next to our house in our district. We do that because we actually care about picking up the trash because it's awful out there and we would like it to be cleaner, but it's also a good way to have visibility. Another story I will share is that my mother-in-law had this conversation I think about all the time where she had 9 kids and a younger woman was talking to her about like, I'm so stressed. What am I going to do? And my mother-in-law said, well, I started to put up pictures of the presidents of the United States in our kitchen to teach my kids about them because it sounded fun to me. So she was like, this is something fun that I can do in this really insane time of motherhood and parenting that's being difficult for her. And the other woman responded with being like, oh, you're right. I just need to take more time out for myself. And my mother-in-law was like, no, that's not at all what I said. And I think we're in this age of like self-care, you know, take a bubble bath, which is super important and good, but also you've got to find things that give you joy in the thing you are doing. How are you going to find joy in the hard thing, not to get away from it, not to get outside and do something different? And so that's why we've done some of these events like the comedy night and the cleanup campaign, is because there's something that I like to do and it's fun. And, you know, at the end of the day, running is all about what do you want? This is going to have your name literally plastered all over it. What are you going to put with that? What do you actually care about?
That's such good advice, to find something you like in what you're doing as opposed to just stop doing it or power through. That's better advice. It makes life happier. So tell me about we've talked a little bit about your family and you're talking about dragging your kids around and not losing your children. Super important ball not to drop. But what kind of support did you receive from your family as you're running for office?
Both my parents, my brother, all of Jacob's family, my 9 in-laws, well, 8 of them, including Jacob, they have all been very helpful and good. Lots of willingness to talk me through things. It's sometimes they might spend less time coming out and volunteering with me, but they are usually the people at the end of the day I go talk to when I'm like, I'm really worried about how I'll handle this law if it comes up, or I'm really worried about how to talk to people about these things that are important to them, but I have different opinions. Mm-hmm. It's become a very safe space to have those conversations, and I really needed a place to have those conversations.
Yeah.
I'm not gonna lie, my children do not like to come door knocking. They usually, there's a lot of screaming about it sometimes.
It sounds like they're pretty young too.
My oldest is 8, okay. My next is 6. And then the 18-month-old. Actually, I should lie. I lied when I said they hate it, because one of them loves it. One is the baby who, when she was born, was the sweetest baby ever. She was good at waving early on. And when we decided to run for office, we were like, Maggie will like that. She'll have a great time. I think she was bored for this moment a little bit too. So she does a really good job.
Waving baby prop. That's fantastic.
Yeah, she is the perfect campaign baby. And my campaign manager will tell you that too. She's just along for the ride. And she's in it to win it. She's helpful and good. But the other two don't like it. It actually has been hard on our family. It's not like everybody magically jumps up and says, let's go help mom. So I do have to take time apart from my family sometimes. There are times when they say, I do not want to put on a campaign shirt. And I have to say, you're right. You don't have to do that. We're not going to make you do that today. So you really got to strike a balance there of what you're willing to push them to do and what you're not willing to push them to do. And for a lot of that, it was fundraising so we could hire a part-time campaign manager. Mm-hmm. So we could push off a little bit of that work, which is a sacrifice. Like that's money I could have spent to you know, run more ads or whatever. But having that balance of time was good for our family. So it's not perfect, and your children probably will not be super excited to come and they're not going to make it rosy.
Yeah.
But they're still really good. My daughter wrote me a card at the beginning that says, Mom, I hope you have a good time, but I bet you will have a hard time. Oh. She was like, I hope it's good, but I know it's going to be hard. we try to be realistic about that.
Very wise child right there.
Yes.
Yeah, I talked to a lot of women about this and who've run for office, and it's really a spectrum of how their kids feel about it. Because I think the younger side don't really get the vision too. I mean, right? They don't know 6 and 8, but
they are still learning to talk to people. They are still learning good things.
They're learning a ton, and they're observing you, and they're seeing you do hard things. And I mean, I think all of those things are good for kids, even if they don't like it, right? We're always making our kids do things that are good for them that they don't like. But a lot of the women I talk to who have older kids say their kids have been really interested, involved, and happy to door knock. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, it depends on the ages, and I totally get that. But the balance would be hard, especially with younger kids. And I applaud you for running anyway, because that's hard, and it's a lot, and it's a sacrifice for you to do it, and you're doing it because you know young mothers, young families need representation, and that's important. Mm-hmm. And I really appreciate you doing that and being willing to make those sacrifices and teach your kids those lessons and all of that. So I wanted to close. We are out of time, sadly, because I need to talk to you more. But what invitation do you have for our listeners? Do you have something to invite them to do?
So I have a pretty specific ask, which is that I want you to log into my phone bank and make an actual phone call to a voter, which is a little bit self-serving of me. But also, I think it sounds so terrifying and scary to get involved, and you've really just got to do it. You've actually got to make that phone call and try it once, and it gets way easier. 90% of the time with phone banking, you are just leaving voicemails anyways.
Yeah.
And we give you a script and everything. So you can go to, let me pull up my link. It is just going to be bit.ly, like bit.ly, like that kind of standard link shortener. And then you can choose anyone. I will send you to this one. It's Harriman, capital HERRIMAN, and then calls for the number Katie. That'll take you in. You can log in. It's going to give you a name. It's going to give you some background on that person. It's going to give you a script, and you read it, make the call, write it down. It is intimidating, but you can totally do it.
I've been in politics for a while before we had these online auto dial, you know, systems, and it was such a pain. You had to actually go into the phone bank. You had to be there in person. You had these paper call sheets. And now that shows how old I am, right? But now it is super easy to just log on, and almost every candidate has it. So if one of the things we ask people to do is volunteer, that is a really good way to just volunteer for a candidate. You just go to their website. They're going to have a little button. You click it, right? And you make calls for phone banks, and it's easy, and people will hang up on you. Most people won't answer, but it's not a big deal.
Yep. But I've never had somebody be unkind to me on the phone, even when they had strongly different opinions. Yeah. They're usually pretty nice, or they're not going to answer the phone. You leave a voicemail. You can do one call, or you can do 20. You can do it from anywhere. Or you can do it anytime before 8:30.
You could do it when you're bored sitting with your phone instead of, you know, scrolling Instagram or TikTok videos.
Yes. Social media is not going to save any lives. And I think we're kidding ourselves if we think we're being active and involved by hitting that like button.
Potentially moving it in the other direction.
Yeah. So, yeah. Get out there. Do something real.
History says about social media, but... okay, well, thank you, Katie, so much for joining us. I feel like I've learned a ton today. You're such a delight to talk to. I wish you the best of luck in the next little while you're campaigning. Thank you all for listening to the Project Elected podcast. For free resources and materials, head over to projectelectwomen.org. We'd love for you to subscribe, rate us, give us a review on iTunes. So until next time, thank you.